The very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society. And we are, as people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings. We decided long ago that the damages of excessive and unwarranted concealment of pertinent facts far outweighed the dangers which are cited to justify it. And there is a very grave danger that an announced need for increased security will be seized upon by those anxious to expand its meaning. Our quote today comes from a 1961 speech from the late President John F. Kennedy. Welcome to the Darrell McLean Show. I'm your host, Darrell McLean, and let's get into our episode.
Intelligentsia, the interim of sarcasm, the nutty professor, to your whack-ass Marmalade. It's T-Bone from T-Bone and Chick Brew in the Morning. Now available in podcast format. Simply search for the T-Bone and Chick Brew podcast, available wherever fine podcasts are sold.
We talk about a lot of serious topics on this show, and one very serious topic is women's health. One company that stuck out to me was VSay.com because the owner is very transparent about her own struggles in the women's health department, and they have great customer service, great prices, and frequent sales. Check them out, their great customer service and their frequent sales at www.vslay.com. That's www.vslay.com. The very word secrecy is a repugnant to a free and open society. Now, since the founding of this country, a totalitarian closed form of government has been considered unacceptable and un-American. The public assumes that they have the freedom to be left alone and live a life in privacy, while the government is believed to be open and transparent, humbly serving the people. In reality, this patriotic belief is no longer true. It now appears that we are severe to the political class, and our personal lives are being forced to become more transparent, while the decision makers operate in complete secrecy. In a 1961 speech, John F. Kennedy spoke accurately about the dangers of a secret society and warned the American public that there are those among us eager to misuse power in the name of security. Quote, "The very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society, and we are, as his people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings. We decided long ago that the dangers of excessive and unwarranted concealment of pertinent facts far outweighed the dangers which are cited to justify it. And there is a very grave danger that an announced need for increased security will be seized upon by those anxious to expand its meaning." End quote. Power is truly intoxicating to some, and the most effective way for them to expand their demand for power is by frightening others and creating an impression that chronic intrusions into our personal lives is solely for national security purposes. However, until 2 years ago, we had no idea that our government was protecting us through domestic spying programs because it was all conducted behind closed doors, shrouded in secrecy. Under the pretense of the national security, perhaps the most egregious violation of transparency by a federal agency is a bulk collection of our metadata by the NSA, the National Security Agency. There is ample evidence to suggest that this organization does as it pleases outside the law and will only continue to grow under the executive branch simply to have its unconstitutional actions constantly reinforced by the Supreme Court when challenged. The NSA has not accomplished much despite operating at an enormous expense to the taxpayers. Those pushing complete surveillance uneasingly emphasize the need for the NSA to protect the homeland despite the fact that the bulk collection of phone records have not stopped a single terrorist attack. Not one. Any planned attacks that were thwarted through traditional means, such as good police work or investigation work, according to the government's own reports and congressional testimony. It is possible to have safety and security without violating civil liberties. Looking sociologically at the consequences of the NSA's action deserve close attention. The NSA spying on ordinary Americans has had a profound chilling effect in several ways. No longer do people feel comfortable expressing their private thoughts with friends and family. Couples no longer discuss important issues over the phone, fearing that what is recorded and permanently stored by the NSA, and family members constantly remind each other to watch what type of stuff they are sharing over the computers. It's important to note that privacy is a basic human right and elects a stronger society. Computer security expert Jacob Alberman, who worked on the Tor network, says, "When we lose privacy, we lose agency." He explains that Americans wrongfully believe that the state will only target the other. Thanks to whistleblower Edward Snowden, we now know that that is no longer true. We are the other. Due to the corrupt decisions made by political class, supported by a frightened and complicit populace, privacy is effectively dead. Furthermore, as the fabric of our country is increasingly changing, people no longer feel that they can even express their discontent with their own government for fear of retribution. Those fears were confirmed last year and made national news when the IRS targeted conservative organizations. Most of us were taught that adhering to our founding documents, such as the Bill of Rights, was precisely what made America so uniquely special, what past generations knew needed to be safeguarded with a watchful eye. Contrast that with today, what sort of legacy will be left behind for the future children? It's difficult to explain to them that the government agencies functioning in secret, spying on them, operating through unconstitutional means, deserves billions of taxpayer dollars each year. Totalitarian regimes throughout history use secrecy and fear as a powerful weapon, and all regimes operate under the pretense of national security. They say they are protecting us, and they say they are keeping us safe, and cleverly convince the public that that's what America's people want. It is not so much that the government is taking our freedoms as we are willfully and perhaps unwittingly forfeiting them. Through illusions and manipulation, many Americans idly believe we still live in a country where chanting in unison and flag waving are believed to be the definition of freedom and patriotism. We would do well to heed JFK's early warnings to scrutinize the excessive secrecy of government entities and their invasions into our private lives. It is only with an acute awareness and a change in the consciousness among the American people that the next government and the next generation will have the opportunity to live in a free society. So why am I talking about this today? Because new documents, newly released documents, have actually revealed that the CIA plotted to kidnap and murder Julian Assange.
So the CIA under Trump and led by Mike Pompeo apparently were floating plans to kidnap or even assassinate Julian Assange. Let me just read you the leading paragraphs here. They say in 2017, as Julian Assange began his fifth year of holdup in Ecuador's embassy in London, the CIA plotted to kidnap the WikiLeaks founder, spurring heated debate among Trump administration officials over the legality and practicality of such an operation. Some senior officials inside the CIA and the Trump administration even discussed killing Assange, going so far as to request sketches or options for how to assassinate him. Discussions over kidnapping or killing Assange occurred, quote, at the highest levels of the Trump administration, said a former senior counterintelligence official. There seemed to be no boundaries. I want you just to think for a moment about how completely insane this is. Number one, Why are they so angry at Assange? Because he exposed their secrets and they wanted revenge. I mean, this was like, this was personal. If you read this, a lengthy piece, if you read through it, you come to realize, I mean, this wasn't about any concern about, oh, our people might be put at risk or any of that. Total bullshit. The spin that they try to tell you about how American service members or whatever are put at risk. No, they were furious. It was personal and they wanted revenge. So think about what they're contemplating here. They were actively floating and considering scenarios that involved like gunfights on London streets to take this guy out, either to kidnap him through rendition or to actually murder him. This, the level of insanity, psychopathic behavior, the level of arrogance to think you could just craft something like this and execute it is mind-blowing, and it shows you the way that these people operate. There is nothing that is out of bounds here.
Well, what's even more troubling too is about all of what it ended up justifying. It's a lot like January 6th, what we just talked about,
yeah,
which is that among the journalists that U.S. officials wanted to designate as, quote, information brokers were Glenn Greenwald, columnist at The Guardian, Laura Porche, a documentary filmmaker. Now, the reason why, this is a former official who talked to Yahoo, said, is WikiLeaks a journalistic organization? Are Laura Porche and Glenn Greenwald truly journalists? We tried to change the definition, and I preached this to the White House and got rejected. Now, this is very important because this is actually something Glenn points to all the time, which is that if the National Security Division of the Justice Department can go after Assange for what he did, which was essentially help leak classified information, many journalists could then be subject to the same rules. Now, remember, what he did there in terms of Chelsea Manning was he spoke to her and he's like, hey, here's how you know, whatever, get the documents to me. That's something, though, that journalists put on their page. They'll be like, here's my, you know, PGP key,
yeah,
or like, here's how to contact me via Signal, whatever. That then could be construed under the same law, technically, as a conviction of Assange that could come. And they exactly point to the fact that the intelligence community were trying to designate Glenn and other journalists not as journalists specifically so they could go after them and subject them to the different types of spying protocols that we would use against an enemy. This is the problem that we have, which is that once you start to go down this road, you can begin to see how it all becomes very slippery.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can have a situation where the Trump administration, who benefited more from WikiLeaks? I mean, in some ways, like, they owe part of their victory, at
yeah.
least, you know, to
mm-hmm.
some of these email leaks, which is fine by me, actually. You know, I think the information should come out, and I think that's important. But you put all of that together, and it was very clear that this was a slow-moving truck within the CIA, that the Trump administration basically gave the CIA a total carte blanche. They're like, hey, do whatever
yeah.
you want.
Mm-hmm.
And Pompeo was very much on board with that agenda. They greenlit some very, very... I mean, this is almost like assassinate Castro level
yeah.
of craziness.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you look at this. I mean, this is London. Like, what? The Brits are going to be totally chill with us assassinating somebody? Or kidnapping somebody on their soil and doing a rendition to a friendly country? We put all of this behind us in the Bush administration for good reason, in my opinion. And, you know, you go and you look at the conduct here that at least was being contemplated. Trump put out a statement last night. He goes, it never happened. I actually think Assange was treated very badly.
Then why
never
did you pardon him?
Right.
Why did you let, and not just
yeah.
did you not pardon him, but it was you all are the ones who went after him. They track it's interesting because they track the view of Assange throughout the Obama presidency and the way it changed, and then throughout the Trump presidency. And Obama originally, they had their own press freedom issues, aggressively prosecuting leakers and all of that, and whistleblowers. But they were worried about this distinction that you're talking about. Like, well, what makes WikiLeaks different from any other journalistic outlet?
Exactly.
How can we possibly draw this line? So initially, they were actually pretty cautious. They were worried. They didn't indict him for the entirety of the Obama administration because they were worried about this distinction. Then, once you have the Edward Snowden revelations, well, then they start to take the gloves off. Then they start to say, listen, any sort of basically covert activity, spying, all of that, we're pretty much okay with. So they ramp up the aggressive tactics in terms of the surveillance of Assange. Then when Trump comes into office, it's really gloves off. They consider all of this insanity, kidnapping him. They were obsessed with the idea that he was going to flee to Russia. And so they were even planning, like, should we engage in gunfire on the streets with Russian operatives? If that's what, on the streets of London, again, like, this is what they're considering. And apparently putting forward sketches and plans as to how you could actually murder him, considering things like, well, what if we ran his car off the road? Would that work? What if we poisoned him? Was another thing that they considered. Okay? Total insanity. There's also a very revealing line here where they were like, some of the people who were, you know, the wise hands and the level heads in the room were like, well, this isn't like Pakistan or Egypt. We can't just do whatever we want because it's London, which also is very revealing about the way they treat, you know, people and governments in other parts of the world. But that was apparently part of the reticence. So the compromise position was to take this aggressive legal approach towards Assange, which led to his indictment over what you're talking about, which is they allege that he helped Chelsea Manning hack to get these documents, something that Assange and his family and his legal team certainly denies. But then they layer on top of that what's even more dangerous, this espionage charge.
Yeah, that's right.
That's what they're trying to get him extradited from the UK right now to face those charges. So that was the compromise position. But obviously, not only did Trump not pardon him, but extraordinarily aggressive in going after him. The level of surveillance also, we find this quote from this piece that he was subjected to. They said there wasn't anyone within a 3-block radius. Who was it? Intelligence. It got to the point where every human being in a 3-block radius was working for one of the intelligence services. Whether they were street sweepers or police officers or security guards, they also infiltrated the security company that was working at the Ecuador embassy. So they had eyes on him every moment of the day. And again, for what? For the crime of journalism, for the crime of exposing war crimes, for the crime of exposing the rigging that the DNC was doing. I mean, these ultimately, the thing that they were really pissed about was the release of documents related to what they call Vault 7, which is these sort of like CIA tactics and tools. That was what pissed the intelligence community off, apparently, more than anything else. But ultimately, this was all about revenge. And the last thing I'll say here is it is insane, it is outrageous, it is unconscionable that the Biden administration has continued this Trump prosecution of Julian Assange. The Obama administration had it right when they decided we cannot indict this guy, we cannot charge this guy because we will be criminalizing journalism. The fact that Kamala Harris and Tony Blinken and Joe Biden all feel free to go out there and pretend like they care about freedom of the press when you are trying to send Julian Assange to prison for the crime of exposing secrets and doing journalism is shocking, it is unacceptable, and it is something that people need to be reminded of every single day.
Yeah, it really is hilarious. What they really mean by freedom of the press is freedom for Jim Acosta and the White House press corps. Like,
think
real journalists
that.
Like Glenn and or even Assange under this definition.
Yeah.
Nothing.
No, absolutely. No, they'll get so upset about, oh, a mean tweet and, oh, this person was unfairly targeted or whatever. And, like, look, it's not nice when people are mean to journalists, but that is nothing compared to what Glenn has been through and certainly what, I mean, they have destroyed this man.
Yeah.
They have aggressively sought to utterly destroy this man, up to including literally trying to murder him. Insane.
So that was absolutely shocking. I'm going to let Ryan Grimm and a guest that they had that were very thorough on this topic. We're going to hear that next. And I think it's very important to do a bit of a correction of sort. So it did not start in the Trump administration. That's what was so aggressive about it. This actually started during the Bush, it went straight through to Obama, and it went all the way through to Donald Trump. This is something that president after president has aggressively gone after. Obama aggressively tried to prosecute Chelsea Manning, aggressively went after Edward Snowden, aggressively went after Julian Assange. So this was just a continuation from president to president, and it is because they were embarrassed that the war crimes were seen. And you could tell that it was an embarrassment, and the sad part is that the media fell right in line, because when the documents were released by WikiLeaks, you could tell who were the real journalists were and who were the people taking the line from the Pentagon press corps. And I say that to say this: if you go back and look at the coverage of the releasing of those WikiLeaks documents that came from Chelsea Manning, Edward Snowden, and Glenn Greenwald, and Julian Assange, you will see a lot of the real media networks online, so independent media, would actually go through and say what the document said. They would show the video of the innocent people being killed, including some EMTs who came to rescue people who that we had killed, who we said were terrorists, who were not. And the other organizations, the mainstream media, just constantly reported documents had been taken. These people had taken documents. They never, ever, they went out of their way to never tell the general public what the documents said. And that is what gave the game away. The real journalists were the ones not only saying documents are taken, were taken, and this is what they say. They revealed some of the cables between some of the ambassadors. And that stuff was shocking and salacious, and it was embarrassing. They revealed that what the NSA, all that massive data collection, and the NSA did not want that stuff to be released. They revealed what the CIA was doing that nobody knew about, that was not in a lot of these government secret institutions. And I think that if most Americans did know, they would not agree with. And they will be punished. They will be hunted from administration to administration because of that. Joe Biden is the president, and he was the vice president for Barack Obama. So I'm not really shocked that he is going to continue aggressively chasing after these people for the crime of exposing what the government was doing. So now I'm going to go to Ryan Grimm talking about this a bit further.
Expose details the CIA's alleged plans to kidnap or kill WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange. Yahoo News reported that while Assange was holed up for his fifth year in Ecuador's London embassy in 2017, the CIA and the Trump administration, led by then CIA Director Mike Pompeo, debated plans to kidnap and even kill the exiled journalist. Calls for the Biden administration to drop the charges against Assange have been mounting, especially in light of the expose. In a statement responding to the report, Freedom of the Press said, "The CIA is a disgrace. The fact that it contemplated and engaged in so many illegal acts against WikiLeaks, its associates, and even other award-winning journalists is an outright scandal that should be investigated by Congress and the Justice Department. The Biden administration must drop its charges against Assange immediately." Kevin Gastola, managing editor at Shadowproof, who's been closely covering the Assange case, joins us now to discuss. Welcome, Kevin.
Hey, thank you. Good morning.
So first of all, let's talk about the implications of this extraordinary reporting from Yahoo News on the extradition case that remains ongoing. The U.S. is appealing its rejection of its attempt to extradite Assange. But does the fact that the U.S. has now been implicated in plotting both either the assassination or the rendition of Assange play into their ability to extradite him? In other words, can a country legally extradite somebody that they very recently plotted to kidnap?
I'm afraid, without getting into the specifics of what was revealed in the report, that in fact the legal system in the UK could continue to plod forward without contemplating what is at stake here, what is at issue with the CIA's plans to allegedly kidnap or even kill Julian Assange because it's on such narrow grounds that they are considering whether the U.S. has merits for its appeal and whether they should be granted this extradition request.
Yeah, is the government admitting they've done it? What is their response to this report? Are they just no comment?
Well, if you're asking if the U.S. government has conceded that all of this activity went on within the CIA, there are several clips over the last weeks and months with reporters confronting people like Secretary of State Antony Blinken. There's a recent clip of an Al Jazeera reporter questioning Jen Psaki, the White House press secretary. And every time you ask the officials in President Biden's administration about this case, they want to pretend like it isn't ongoing. And I think it's because they realize how shameful it is and how much of the world loathes that this is continuing at the Justice Department.
Well, let's play that Jen Psaki clip right here, actually.
Members of the administration, you recently talked about the importance of journalism to democracy. The president also made a point of saying his presidency was different from his predecessor. So why is President Biden keeping the Trump-era charges against Julian Assange? Why is he allowing the prosecution for publishing the truth about human rights abuses in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Guantanamo? And does the president believe the ongoing detention of Assange is reasonable, even moral, given the transparency delivered and the greater good served?
Well, I don't have anything new to say on the on Julian Assange, and I would point you to the Department of Justice on that.
All right, so that clip predated this recent reporting. We'll see if Psaki is pressed on that again. But, you know, there's going to be an impulse among people to say, you know what, this was just, you know, Trump and Pompeo being Trump and Pompeo. This is a couple of crazies. But there are a number of important details in the Yahoo News story that undercut that attempt to dismiss it. And one of those is that it says that the plans to kidnap Assange actually predated Pompeo, that there were already plans kind of on the shelf that Pompeo was able to draw from. And certainly he pushed it forward and he encouraged the agency to get more aggressive in its thinking. But is that surprising, Kevin? And what do we know about what the CIA had been planning even before Pompeo and Trump arrived?
Yeah, so what Michael Isikoff and the other two reporters at Yahoo News map out here is that when WikiLeaks made the decision to assist or try and help Edward Snowden, NSA whistleblower Edward Snowden, get to some kind of safety, of course he ended up trapped in Moscow. But when they made that decision to try and help, it changed the calculation on the part of the Obama administration as to how much they were going to avoid or use discretion when it came to pursuing an Espionage Act prosecution against Julian Assange. And so then they decided that the CIA could go back to doing any kind of collection against the CIA. And following that, what we learn is that CIA Director Mike Pompeo was so obsessed with Julian Assange, particularly after the Vault 7 materials were published. And these were basically revelations around offensive cyber warfare tools that the CIA has. That they lost control over. And it was shameful. They had mocked the State Department and the Pentagon for losing control of their documents to WikiLeaks. And then now they were the victim. And WikiLeaks was laughing at them. And so Mike Pompeo was obsessed. He didn't want Donald Trump to learn that they had lost control of these sensitive materials that reveal things that, like, how you could put malware or target Samsung televisions, go after the Signal or WhatsApp, encryption applications that are messaging apps, zero-day exploits, which we've had a lot of attention to with the Pegasus spyware revelations. And so then he says, we got to go after him. We've got to redesignate WikiLeaks as a hostile entity. And they say in the report that they couldn't actually prove within the CIA that WikiLeaks was working directly for the Russians. And so they were not able to target the organization for disruption going that route. So in order to target them for disruption, they had to now redefine WikiLeaks as a hostile entity.
Now, the partner of Julian Assange, Stella Morris, tweeted, "It's impossible to overstate the significance of the expose of CIA plans to kill Assange. But Russia exfiltration claims are false. Corrupt security contractor UC Global admitted fabricating RU claims to keep $200,000 a month U.S. bribes coming. CEO is charged over plots and obstructing justice." But can you break that down for us?
Because what she's referring to is there's a bunch of intrigue in this story based on conversations with officials about a potential shootout that could have occurred outside the embassy. As you have all these spies, including UC Global, that are collecting the communications of Julian Assange and his legal team and associates and trying to figure out how Ecuador is going to see if they can spring him from the embassy. And I think they wanted to bring him to a Latin American country. That was what I had always understood. But now we learn that through Fidel Narvaez, there was some conversations with Assange about potentially relocating to the Ecuador embassy in Moscow. But Julian Assange rejected going to Moscow and living in that embassy. And so anyways, what's most incredible about this report is that it talks about shooting out the tires of a Russian plane. And I can't imagine, you know, think of the sort of diplomatic catastrophe that we would have on our hands if any Western country was found to have shot the tires of a Russian plane, let alone any other country's plane. And then it says in there that the British government agreed to do it for the United States if they were asked. It's incredible.
Yeah, on one hand, it's hard to imagine people, our government, contemplating even doing this. And on the other hand, it's not at all hard to imagine our government contemplating doing this because they do stupid and horrible, yeah, unethical, illegal, murderous things all the time.
Just wanted to get you to elaborate a little real quickly on the Guccifer 2.0 connection, because I thought it was really interesting the way that Yahoo reported out that, you know, the intelligence agencies really desperately were trying to prove that WikiLeaks was a Russian-backed operation, because then that opened up all sorts of capabilities that they could then offensively carry out against WikiLeaks. But they simply didn't have the evidence to back that up. What they did have is that WikiLeaks had communicated with this hacker, Guccifer 2.0, who they say with some credibility was a front for the Russian government, for the GRU. But their problem was nobody could prove that. A journalist doesn't necessarily know that. And lots of journalists, including some from the Intercept, were, I don't know if they were at the Intercept at the time, were in communication with Guccifer 2.0. This account was contacting lots of different journalists. And so if just being in contact, you know, with a person who may have some connection to the Russian government that you don't know about makes you a Russian entity, then everyone in journalism is a Russian entity who communicated with that person. So they ended up backing off that case and went with their fallback plan was, well, they're a non-state hostile actor, so therefore we can carry out offensive operations against them. Is that about right? And what do you think of the Guccifer 2.0 connection?
Well, so I think what's really important here, as you're raising this, is that we should talk about the fact that in this article it mentions that the CIA was thinking about classifying Julian Assange as well as other high-profile journalists, including Glenn Greenwald and Laura Poitras, who at the time I'm sure were their focus because they were working on the Snowden documents. They wanted to reclassify them as information brokers so that they could get around a whole bunch of legal guidelines that they're expected to follow at the CIA when it comes to collection, as well as whether you can target certain individuals for disruption and mount offensive intelligence operations. And so that to me is something we need to chew over and discuss, because essentially what they're saying is they're going to treat journalists much like they might treat arms traffickers or arms smugglers. So essentially you could be accused of information trafficking, or you're an information broker. And so just the fact that you have documents that you possess from a source makes you someone that the CIA, or I suppose any other intelligence entity in the United States government, could target you and try to prevent you from doing journalism. All of these people that we're talking about, whether it's the Snowden documents or even the Podesta emails, were involved in putting forward revelations that were in the public interest. I mean, we don't have to go down the laundry list of why, but these people were engaged in journalism and they were not engaged in hacking of any U.S. government agencies.
Yeah, really, right. Really concerning stuff.
Yeah, and to be clear, information brokering is journalism.
Right.
That's what journalism is.
There's no official designation. Anyone who practices journalism is a journalist.
You're getting information from sources and you're putting it to the public. That's an information broker.
The government cannot hunt you down and kill you for that.
Well, they can try.
They can try. Kevin, thank you so much for joining us.
So this is why I wanted to have the conversation about the government, privacy, journalism, secrecy, and what we think is actually necessary for a functional society. I have always tried my best in life to be more nuanced, and because I've seen things are somewhat a bit more complicated than we would like to pretend that it is. I've done that while recognizing the fact that we reward the exact opposite of what we say that we like. So we say we like moderates, but when I look at the way people spend their money, that's actually not true. The people who are the loudest in our society are the people who we give the most to. If you look on the left side of the political spectrum in the country, well, your left-wing, bombastic bomb thrower is the one who's getting the most money. And if you look on the right, your white right-wing, idealistic bomb thrower is the one that's getting the most money. People who try to call it 100% straight down the middle, your Amy Goodmans, your Chris Hedges, your Charles Krauthammer's, he's dead now, but you know, but the people who are nuanced and middle of the road, even toned, that's just not who gets rewarded in society. And when I see these stories where I see somebody who did something so offensive that they told the secrets of the people who were in power and they were hunted down and it's still being hunted down, hunted by administration to administration to administration, to me that tells me everything that I need to know about whether this person was right or whether this person was wrong. Now, that is not a telltale sign. You know, you still have to go look at what was actually done, you know, for the sake of posterity and for the sake of research. But the fact that administration after administration has targeted Chelsea Manning, that they have targeted Edward Snowden, that they have targeted Julian Assange, that they have targeted Glenn Greenwald, that they have targeted the very nature of what it is we call journalism is something that we all need to pay attention to. The right to free speech and the freedom of the press, and this is important, the freedom of the press was actually enshrined in the First Amendment. For a very particular reason, because the founders knew that, just like a counselor would tell you, everything crumbles with secrets. Secrets actually possess you and harm a society in the same way it harms a relationship. So I wanted us to do this conversation for that very specific reason about secrecy, about the notion for secret societies in the way that we think about them may not be all that they are cracked up to be, and it's something we really need to start to weave back. And I want us to have an ear ready to hear and understand when somebody has the notion that something is good, and it is so secretive that I can't tell you about it. Just trust me that you really need to pay very close attention to what they are trying to sell you, okay? And what they have tried very hard to punish Julian Assange and all these other people for is, at its core, just journalism. So one topic show today, at least in that vein. Of course, thank you for tuning in. If you want to support the show, you can obviously do so by going to www.patreon.com/TheDerone McClain Show and get a membership for as little as $3 a month and help support independent media that won't lead you to tribalism.
Intelligentsia, the interim of sarcasm, the nutty professor, to your whack-ass marmalade. It's T-Bone from T-Bone and Chick Brew in the Morning. Now available in podcast format. Simply search for the T-Bone and Chick Brew podcast, available wherever fine podcasts are sold.